Ladies and gentlemen,
good evening.
Are you ready?
Okay, here we go.
You're listening to the Deal Room Podcast. Join us as we bring you the inside scoop on business sales and acquisitions. Get across trends in the area and hear the industry's best recount their real life tips, traps, and experiences. Now, here's your host, Joanna Oakey.
Hi, it's Joanna Oakey here, and welcome back to the Deal Room Podcast, a podcast proudly brought to you by our commercial legal practice, Aspect Legal. Now, today we are back with our State of the Market series, and we are joined by two experts in the fields of medical and veterinary practice sales, Chris Babich and Paolo Lencioni, for part two of our two-part series on this unique sector. Now, part one is in the show notes if you missed it, so just click there to head back to that episode. But in this episode, part two, we dig into some of the differences in valuations, earnouts, and other unique aspects of medical and veterinary practices when it comes to exits and acquisitions, and of course, valuations. So here we go with part two with Chris and Paolo.
I always say to my doctor, I say, look, there's the price and there's the terms and conditions, right? So the price might vary quite a bit if your terms and conditions are going to be hit. I mean, I've had some doctors with incredible terms and conditions, and they still expect the top price, and it's very hard to achieve.
But can I ask, Chris, like, just if you were to say, if you were to have a stab in the dark of your, yes, say, the medical practices saying selling at the higher of your multiples,
yeah.
What proportion of them are some sort of structured deal? So, you know, an earn out or, you know, something that's contingent on the future operation of the business.
Well, I don't have that. So I don't know what other brokers do, but I just don't have that, you know. I've got some that I've sold. And actually some that I've got in the pipeline at the moment where they're getting, you know, 70% of the agreed-on price up front and then balance of 30% after 12 months subject to maintaining the same profit margin. Right? Mm. I've got that. But it's rare. In most cases where individual buyers are buying, it's just a straight out 10%, 90%, and that's it.
Yeah.
So when we look at multipliers and stuff, I look at walk-in, walk-out sales. And when I look at EBITDA, so just for kind of where we get this from and where we get our averages from is we also work as CFOs effectively for about 100 veterinary practices where we do interim reporting for them. So the EBITDA base is across the clients we work hands-on with, which does run at a higher profit margin than the general veterinary industry. But our average client runs at an EBITDA of about 19.4, 19.5.
That's great.
So that's the average. From the veterinary associations, generally the accepted average EBITDA for a veterinary practice is around 14%, which actually isn't that bad either. So then when we come down to multipliers for walk-in, walk-out sales, we would normally be applying a 4 to 5.3 times multiplier. On a veterinary practice on that EBITDA. So from the sale perspective, the value perspective of the veterinary business, my feeling would be that it would probably come in at a higher value because of that. When we're looking at things, we actually see quite a few with earnout clauses, never from a private buy-sell, but because of the corporate activity. If a corporate is purchasing a veterinary practice, they will not purchase a veterinary practice without an earnout clause. And generally, they want a 2 to 3 year earnout clause now from the business owner, where they pay 80% upfront, and the 20% residual is based on certain KPIs for the next, 2 to 3 years. Yeah. And the last one we saw, we had a corporate purchase paid a 9x multiplier. However, when you actually look at the opportunity cost, when you understand that the profitability of a veterinary practice is over 20% generally, like in this type of practice it was, when you actually look at the opportunity cost of the business owner actually staying there for an additional 3 years, And 9x multiply actually equates to 5x multiply. Because what will happen then is they will stay their additional 3 years as an employee. Yes. And as an employee, they don't get the residual profits anymore, which are significant, which means actually it all comes out in the wash. So an earn-out clause is just a very cleverly packaged way of saying we can offer you a higher multiplier. But when we actually worked it out financially, you know better rules. The interesting thing though is, and this is the is that veterinarians generally the accepted wage for a veterinary surgeon is significantly lower than it is for a dentist, and I'm presuming it's significantly lower than it is for a GP. So when we do commercial owners' wage adjustments, when you're employing your when you're paying your experienced veterinary surgeons, and what the owner expects to take home as a wage before profit is significantly lower, because vets don't get paid on percentage of output. They get paid a wage. And the reason behind that is for every veterinarian, you need to have 2 to 3 support staff, nurses, veterinary technicians, etc. So it's very much more of a team-based environment. And your experienced veterinary surgeon will probably take home between $140,000 and $160,000 per annum. I know your experienced dentist is very often on the high 200s to 300s, and I don't know what a GP is. So well, that's my question.
Over to you, Chris. What's a GP?
Well, the annual billings that an individual doctor does could be anywhere as low as 300 to anywhere as high as 600,000. You know, I mean, I've had extremes of, you know, I did one particular sale valuation and then a sale following of a GP who was doing $1 million turnover per year. And I mean, it's the sort of thing you see with specialists without a problem, but with GPs. And the first question I ask when I see a GP turning over more than $600,000 a year, I say, are you being investigated by Medicare? Because, no, I mean, that's a fair question. You know, is Medicare investigating you or investigating on your doctors? In fact, that's some of the questions I ask when I do my evaluations in the whole lineup of information I need. Are you being investigated? If you're starving of it, have you, you know, done the right thing in terms of, you know, your entitlements? Anyway, so the long and short of it is, on the average, I think you probably find the average GP turns over about $400,000 to $450,000 a year. Now, in terms of the salaries they take, it depends on where they're working, because in some practices, you know, they might be getting 65%. In other practices, they might be getting up to 75%. So let's say if you average 70% of that, that's pretty much the sort of remuneration that they're getting. When I say remuneration, I'm talking about contract fee. If it's the actual revenue earners, or is it more of a team effort?
It is much more of a team effort. I mean, the key person is always a veterinarian, but you can displace a lot of the work to your nurses and a lot of the other stuff. There's certain basic procedures nurses are allowed to do. They can make certain recommendations to customers. A lot of practices are running nurse consultations. So it is definitely more of a team effort. And there's also then the ability to use back-of-house surgical facilities, radiology facilities. There's a dispensary in a veterinary practice, so they dispense their own medications. So obviously the turnover from a veterinary surgeon can be a lot higher than that for a GP because a GP generally doesn't dispense their own medications and things like that. So I kind of know what they earn. So the average veterinary surgeon as of 2023 figures this year across our customer base actually grosses around $635,000 a year. Our top performers, average veterinary surgeon will gross close to $1 million. Probably in the high 900,000s. There's only a handful of those. However, in dentistry, it's very, very interesting. In dentistry, most of the privately held dental practices we've been looking at, there's only a handful of them. The practice owner will gross in excess of $1 million. But the employed dentist in that practice will be grossing around the $600,000 mark. And the way the dental contractor thing is generally structured, it's around 35% of gross, to say round figure. It's such that those dentists are earning in the mid $200,000. And I think that is where the human condition comes into play in Australia with your marginal tax rates and things. I think if you don't own a business, there's very little incentive for you to work much harder than that. And a lot of the feedback I'm getting from the dental practices we're working with is, gee, my dentists get to this particular gross and I just can't get them to do any more. They just want to go on holiday all the time. And I think that's kind of where it's at. You have that condition with that. Once you get to that rate, like, there's very little incentive as a non-business owner to work much harder. So it's just interesting around that. That's where the GPs are sitting, like, borderline. That's where the dentists are. Vets actually earn less than that as an employee, which actually takes me to the next thing. I think that's why there's this much higher incentive in the veterinary industry to own a veterinary practice.
May I ask, Paolo, what are the setup costs? You mentioned there's a lot of startups.
Yeah, so the first stage is actually getting planning consent. To actually get a property that council will approve a veterinary practice for is difficult. Then with that, if you're going to be a startup practice, we work on a fit-out cost, which has now, over the last 3 years, doubled. You used to be able to fully fit out a bare-bones startup veterinary practice for about $450,000. You're looking at about $800,000 now fit-out to expenses. And that'll probably work for you. If you do really well, it'll keep you going for about 3 years. And if you've done really well, then you're going to have to extend and expand. So that's kind of the cost room. So what is it for GPs?
Can I just ask you, are there accreditation costs? Does the veterinary practice have to have some form of accreditation?
Yes, they have to be.
And what are the costs involved in that?
The accreditation costs aren't expensive, but they do have to be accredited by the board of that particular state when they open up.
We want to hear about medical. Tell us medical.
Tell us about the fit-out costs. And I'm also interested, have they gone up extortionately in the last 3 or 4 years?
But the costs have gone up significantly. It'll cost you anywhere from what I understand, anywhere from around $3,000 to $4,000 a square metre just to fit the place out. Then you've got accreditation costs, because if you want access to your practice incentive payments, nurse incentive payments, and all these other bits and pieces the government pays, you need to be accredited. So you need to be accredited for New South Wales via the GPA or AGPAL, AGPAO, and that costs the best part of $6,000-$8,000 just to do that. You know, and then if you want to become a GP training practice, you've got to have further accreditation requirements. And again, you know, that goes in over and over and over. So there's a lot. So really, I've always said to my doctors that, to be honest with you, it's better to buy a practice. Because if you're going to spend $600,000-$700,000 plus just fitting a place out, you might as well get something that already is going to give you a cash flow. Already has doctors there, because you've got to find it. It's going to take you 2 or 3 years to even reach break-even point.
I fully agree with you. Like, the best buyers, in my view, in the veterinary industry, and I presume it'll be similar for GPs, is actually finding a practice that's located in a really good area where the retiring clinician has significantly underserviced the existing customer base.
Yes.
Because you buy them at a discount. And then all you have to do, I mean, we've had cases like this where the practice has doubled its turnover under new ownership in 6 months. Okay, so those are the good buyers. The problem is, in the last 5 or 6 years, they haven't existed. So do you still have that? Do you have issues around ability to raise finance for a single individual? Do they have to buy in as multiples? How does that actually roll in the GP industry?
I've never had a problem with a doctor getting finance from Medfing to buy, irrespective of price.
Okay.
Now, I think the reason is, as I think you mentioned previously, that the risk factors for the lender is so little. And that's why Medfing won't lend to a non-medical professional. They won't lend, unless that person is associated in a partnership format with a doctor.
So I guess the answer there, so that answers my question, is I think the medical lenders see veterinary practices a higher risk and actually limit their lending more to veterinary practices than they would to a GP practice, which kind of explains why we're seeing more startups, because it's that individual who just doesn't want to go into partnership with someone else, and certainly the access to a practice that they can buy on their own these days is very limited. And I think that's been the big catalyst for startup veterinary practices. Whereas with GPs, if they've got access to finance, finance, why would you? Like, if you apply a standard future maintainable earnings valuation properly to a business, the whole point of it is that if the purchaser buys for the said price, they will have enough money to service their debt and have residual profit to take home. So really, the amount of the money isn't the problem. Like, they should be, the size of the business isn't the problem. If it's got that return, you'll be able to service your debt. The question is, that valuation methodology assumes the business will carry on performing at that level for the next few years.
Is there anything that you've seen in this discussion that you think, do you know what, this is an insight or something useful for our industry, I guess, Paolo, for Chris, anything in the medical space that you've seen that might be interesting as a reflection on veterinary practice, or Chris, the other way around?
I'll be absolutely honest with you. I think that from what I've heard of the veterinary scene, I think the doctors are doing okay. And in terms of reflection or anything that could be used from the veterinary space, I don't know. I think where the veterinary space is going to have a big advantage is this whole idea of payroll tax. Because that's going to hit the medical profession in a big way, and yet the veterinary space has already got it under control because they're employing all their vets. So there is no concern there. I presume the veterinary practices are paying payroll tax, whereas the doctors are getting all their doctors, their main expense, under contractors, self-employed. So, you know, if you're going to learn anything from that, I gather, why not just employ your doctors? Let's go for the obvious that's going to happen anyway. Yeah.
It's an interesting thing about the medical space. But I think, and I'll let you sort of rebut that in your own insights in a moment, Paolo, but I feel like just anecdotally what I see in the different practices that we deal with, sales, I have to say we've had quite a number of medical practices that have just had to close their doors because they have not had a financial model that has meant they've had something to sell. Either close their doors or someone has come on board, but instead of buy, or they've just sort of given them a nominal amount.
We actually have seen, we have valued practices that are literally worth nothing. And in those instances, yes, it's going to be a token value that practice gets purchased. So it does happen in the veterinary industry. They probably just don't cross your doorstep as a lawyer. Like, contractually, I don't know what happens there, but generally we have had somewhere it's just been a token value. We have to count. Because once a practice is actually, like, once you've done all the adjustments and it's basically either running at under, like 2% EBITDA, or actually running at a loss, you can no longer apply future maintainable earnings valuation. You have to do a basic plant equipment valuation, apply a token value to the customer base, and see whether or not it can be sold. I actually think we always run the risk of thinking we know everything, and I actually love speaking to people who work in these other similar industries because I think there's a lot we can learn from each other. I think there's a lot veterinarians could learn from dentists and GPs. Where veterinary practices are extremely weak is in their efficiency and organization around juggling many balls. Particularly around the consulting room, the biggest bottleneck in veterinary practice is their consulting room. We've established just through our KPI set, looking at workflows in veterinary practice, it's surprising. And then I look at how doctors and dentists work, and they are absolute rock stars at managing that appointment scheduler. Absolute rock stars. You know, that appointment scheduler is full, and they like I must say, the GPs aren't being to like run to time. The dentists are being to run to time. So they are absolutely awesome at doing that kind of stuff. And it's sad to see that the profitability there isn't quite as high as the veterinary industry. They might not have as many ancillary services and things. It might be that the government intervention actually has something to do with that. But I think to have a room with doctors, dentists, and vets brainstorming is a very, very useful tool. Because there's stuff that I call it cross-pollination. The professions haven't mixed enough. And the fact that they don't compete with each other is a fantastic forum for them to share ideas.
All right, look, this has been incredibly interesting, but unfortunately we've run out of time. I just want to say a huge thank you, Paolo and Chris, for coming on today.
Thank you very much.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. Now, can we just make a call out for each of you for, and we'll put, of course, in our show notes how our listeners can get in contact.
Go to our website, aplaccountants.com.au. So that's Alpha Papa Lima, accountantsplural.com.au. There's a contact us page there, and just go in there, type what you want, and we actually respond to our contact us form within 24 hours.
I love that you say we actually respond to our contact us. Good on you. Okay, I love it. Thanks, Chris. How about you?
If anyone wants to get in touch with me, they can give me a call directly. I'm on a working holiday. 0416 132 366. 0416 132 366. Or they can find me. They can Google Babbage Medicos, BABICHMEDICOS, and all my information will come up on there.
I just have to say a huge thank you. So insightful.
Pleasure.
I really enjoyed that.
Thank you for having me. Interesting. Thank you, Paolo.
Thanks, Chris, for sharing. I really enjoyed that. I've learned a lot from that. Thank you.
So have I. It's most interesting.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Deal Room podcast. We hope you're now primed for your next deal with these pointers and have enjoyed these fascinating insights. Now, if you'd like more information about this topic, then head over to our website at thedealroompodcast.com, where you'll be able to download a transcript of this episode, as well as access any contact details and any other additional information we referred to in today's podcast. Now, if you'd like to get in contact with our guests today and the services they offer, you can go ahead and check out our show notes for a link right through to them and their details. You can also book in directly with our legal eagles at Aspect Legal if you'd like to soundboard your next steps, discuss a legal question, or find out more how we can assist, whether that's with buying or selling a business, or perhaps somewhere in between. Now, don't forget to subscribe to the Deal Room podcast on your favourite podcast player to get notifications whenever a new episode is out. We'd also love to hear your feedback, so please leave us a review and rating if you're already one of our subscribers, or even if you're listening to this podcast for the very first time. Every review helps our team produce valuable content for you. Well, thanks again for listening in. You've been listening to Joanna Oakey and the Deal Room podcast, a podcast proudly brought to you by our commercial legal practice, Aspect Legal. See you next time.
Ladies and gentlemen.
That will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Thanks for listening to the Deal Room podcast. To find out more about this episode and other episodes in the series, check out the show notes or head over to our website at thedealroompodcast.com.au.